Dude, I've never heard of this before. Like, why do you even run a real estate podcast? Like, why were we just spending an hour talking about real estate when you have this?
This is so much better. This is so cool.
Dude, this is insane.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
All right, Marco, what is up, my brother? How are you?
Brian, I'm honored to be on your show. This is going to be exciting. We just finished recording an episode on my show.
Yeah, man. Back to back. It's a fast way to meet people, especially doing a back to back podcast, man. Give a little plug, a quick shout out for your show.
My show, it's something I started in 2015. It's called Passive Real Estate Investing. It's not all about real estate. And there's a lot of mindset, entrepreneurship, building businesses and side hustles. It's about building and preserving, creating wealth in real estate. And we just had you on the show, and we're talking about creating financial freedom, building a business and whatnot. So I like to share that with our audience because we want them to know, how do you create more income that you can now reinvest and multiply in hard assets like income producing real estate?
That's a blast, man. I've been a long time listener, so I was honored to be a guest, man. So it's a really good program that you guys run.
Thank you.
So I'm excited today. A couple different directions I want to take it, but first and foremost, for the people that are listening, who is Marco Santarelli?
I'm a serial entrepreneur. I grew up in Canada, was born there, moved to the US 25 years ago. I have three citizenships: Italian citizenship, Canadian citizenship, and American citizenship. I run multiple businesses, have a fairly large real estate portfolio, have some pretty influential business partners, and we're building all kinds of great, fun businesses to help other people learn about money movement, how to create financial freedom and time freedom. I love to teach. I love to talk about money and wealth creation. But I was a serial entrepreneur since I was a teenager. I was listening to Tony Robbins and Brian Tracy and Zig Ziglar and Jim Rohn, all those guys way back in the beginning when all this stuff was on cassette tape, let alone CD or anything else. But yeah, I've just loved doing what I do, and I wanted to just be financially free from a very young age. And I just pursued the topic of money and business and entrepreneurship ever since.
Yeah. So how many different business interests do you have today?
If you were to look at my entity org chart, you'd probably see about 20 some different business entities of various sorts. Some of them are holding companies and whatnot, but there's two main businesses that I focus on and that drive pretty much everything else. Norada Real Estate Investments is a company I started 20 years ago. It is basically the first provider of turnkey rental property that was out there on a nationwide basis. The way that came to be is I was going to these very expensive boot camps with Robert Allen and Mark Victor Hansen, and they were charging $25,000, $35,000 to go to essentially five or six boot camps in different cities around the country. So it's expensive because you had to pay all your travel expenses and accommodations and whatnot. But I took action. The whole thing about, you talk about clarity and taking that clarity and vision and turning it into essentially a tactical plan that gets you results. I did that very quickly. I was buying a lot of property. In fact, I acquired 84 doors, 84 units in 9 months. And that's a lot of acquisition. So investors were coming to me who were taking the education, but not pulling the trigger and taking action, saying, hey, could you coach me? Can you mentor me? Can you help me? And I said, I'm honored, but I can't. I don't have the time. But what I do have is a lot of deal flow. I look at a lot of real estate and underwrite a lot of deals, and I don't buy them all. So why don't I just hand them off to you? So that quickly became an assignment of contract where I was profiting from assigning the contracts to investors. And then I realized, oh man, immediately I saw this light bulb go off above my head. There's a huge business opportunity here because there's a lot, like tens of thousands of investors out there all the time that want to invest in real estate, but need a little bit of handholding, guidance, education, some of the resources and the properties. So why don't I be the guy at the end of the chain the food chain, not doing the mentoring, the coaching, the educating, which everybody was doing, but the company that provided you the turnkey real estate properties that were already vetted and then provide you all the other things that you need with it, such as the financing and the property management. That's how the business was born. Right place, right time, but just having your eyes open, being aware that there is an opportunity to create a business around it. And I did. And so today we're essentially one of the largest providers, nationwide providers of turnkey rental property. And we provide investors everything they need, one-stop shop at no cost. There's no reason not to use us. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose. So that was the core business that kind of took me to another level and another level. And in the process of building that business, it created the financial freedom that you talk about, and then the time freedom that you talk about to start building other business ventures and making other types of investments. And I've been involved in everything from cannabis to crypto and everything in between.
So, yeah, that's a hell of a pivot.
Yeah. And it wasn't
that's when you know you've got discretionary income when you're going into cannabis and crypto.
Yeah. Totally. So it was fun. And these weren't like pivots where I moved away from real estate. It was like, it was more like a sandwich where you just start layering each piece of it on top of it. And that's fortunately the, I want to say freedom, but that's the cool thing about building a successful business. And then once you have a stable pillar, you build another business pillar and then another one and another one. Then you start to diversify and it can be in different industries. You can diversify and be involved in different things simultaneously. And now you're building one success after another. Build the one strong pillar and then move on to the next business venture and then the next one. And that's what I did. That segued to Norada Capital Management, which is a private equity firm. And that business venture right now has three or four unicorns in it that could each be $1 billion businesses. But that's a nine-figure business right now. And investors can, for however long, maybe in the next 18 months, invest in that as through a promissory note, getting paid 50% per year, paid monthly. So it's a lucrative yield for the investors. And we just take that capital that we bring in from investors on the outside and arbitrage it. We leverage it into the business ventures that we're growing and scaling right now through Norada Capital. So it's really fun because it's allowed me to build these big educational empires that we're now reaching out and touching thousands of people to educate them about money, about real estate, money movement, whatever else it may be. So now we're impacting a lot of people. And I know I'm giving you a lot, but what flows out of all that is our ability to help communities around the world with clean water, food, education, teaching them entrepreneurship through an organization we've created called Impact Others. And if you're curious about it or you want to make a donation, it's at impactothers.com. That's like bigger picture, like the bubble around everything else that we're doing. So it's just a wild ride, but it's fun. It's a challenge every day, but it's a fun challenge.
Hey, you are a fucking visionary. You're a visionary, man. At the beginning of the podcast, we're like, he's like, hey, everybody. Hey, I'm a visionary. I'm big picture. I love doing all this stuff. He's like, I hate being in front of a spreadsheet. Put me in front of a spreadsheet and I'm going to die. But how you talk about that is exactly how I talk about our thing, where I'm like, okay, cool. We have Action Academy podcast that goes down to Action Academy community, which goes to the events company, which goes into our boutique hospitality fund and where we're going to start buying up mansions and international real estate and create a huge portfolio and then acquire these businesses underneath. And you're like, wow. And it's like you create this giant vision and there's so much energy around it because that's what fires us up. But let's back it up a little bit because people may hear this and they say, all right, Marco, like Marco does it. Marco's got like 37 businesses. I'm going to create a business, then another business and another business. And I'm going to run them all at the same time. And I'm going to be like Marco. I'm going to be like Brian. I'm going to be like all these people I hear on the podcast. That's not how you do it. You made a really cool distinction, which is one at a time. So if you can give, and you've been doing this for decades. So if you can give some perspective, like when do you know, or what are some good general rules of thumb where you are like, okay, I've got the red light. Like I cannot leave this business yet. Yellow light, I can maybe divert a little bit of attention away from this business. Or green light, like I can focus on other businesses now, and then this business that I have today will be perfectly fine without me. What are some rules of thumb to know when it's time to move on to the next thing?
One of my business partners, Eddie Wilson, great guy. He talks about this. He has a business operating system he calls Empire, and we build all our businesses around that framework. And you start off as a startup. You start building a business. It's a startup. It needs you. You essentially are the business. And then you get to the point where the business becomes a viable business. Like it's a real business. There's a product or service and customers need it and want it. And you can grow and scale that business through additional marketing and advertising. And then once you get to the point of building a sustainable business, which is beyond being a viable business, then you know that you can walk away from it because you've got the systems in place and the resources, which include people, and you've got the people in place to run the business effectively. Like, truth be told, I could walk away from Norada Real Estate, aside from doing the podcast every week, I could walk away from the business for a month and go on a trip and come back and everything would be running just fine because I've got the people and the resources and the systems in place to keep that business running properly. So when you got a sustainable business, that's the point where I think you can now start to take profit from that business and reinvest it in other business ventures or investments. So if you want to have assets on the books that are purely investment purposes, great. You just take your treasury and turn it into assets. Could be real estate, could be whatever, crypto, you name it. But if you have the ability to take those profits and reinvest those into new business ventures, you could double down on your success by leveraging what you've already built and then take it and build another business, which is what I did. I started taking profit and putting it into other business ventures and launching a small mortgage business. And then ultimately, at some point, I started investing in e-com businesses, which led to what is today Norada Capital. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's a long answer to your short question, but you got to get to a point of sustainability where you can walk away from the business and nothing's going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can take profits out of the business and reinvest them into new business ventures.
So I guess a super niche question that I have, and anybody that's a business owner that's listening to this will really understand, is at what point is it more fruitful to reinvest the profits from business one into business two, as opposed to reinvesting profits from business one back into business one? Does that make sense? Like I'm doing, for our instance, it's like going from 1 million to 3 million. It makes more sense to do that. And maybe reinvesting to go from 3 million to 5 million. Because a lot of people, I've gotten advice both ways, where advice number one is it's easier to scale your thing that's already doing millions up another million, or even 100,000 up to the million. It's easier to scale that than to go start something else from scratch. And sometimes starting the new thing from scratch is just us trying to reintroduce chaos back into our lives because that feels normal. So it's just, which at what point is it more fruitful, is the simplified version of that question.
You could probably ask 10 people that question and get 10 different answers. Yeah. For me, I like high alpha, so I'm always going to compare what is the upside potential to the risk that I'm taking. Mm. So it's always a calculated risk, a risk nonetheless, but I'm always going to take a calculated risk and say, look, if I reinvest $1 million back into the business, what can I reasonably expect to make from that reinvestment? And that should be fairly easy to figure out if you've got your marketing systems dialed in. You know what your return on ad spend is and all that stuff. You should be able to figure out what you can scale that to. But if you invest $1 million into another business venture, but it's got the capability of being a 10x return, but you can only maybe make a 2 or 3x return reinvesting $1 million into your existing business, then it, in my opinion, it's worth looking at the new business venture of having a potential 10x return on it. Because to me, that can outweigh what I already have built. To me, it's more exciting to make an investment and have potentially a 10x return rather than a 2x return. The 2x return is predictable and it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's great. But it doesn't excite me, being more of an entrepreneur and a visionary. I want to start a new business and one that I can grow and scale and then step back away from and have potentially an exit, like an exit where I bring in another partner and we have a liquidity event where we have an injection of capital, or maybe we sell it off and we can sell it for 5-7 times revenue, 10 times revenue. To me, that's exciting. So if I can build revenue and the ability to exit or have a capital injection because we bring in some partners down the road because we're raising capital for growth or expansion, the return on that is so much larger than staying with the existing business and just doing a 2 or maybe 3x return on it. But again, mm-hmm. It depends what you want. If you want to go and travel the world like you did, and spend 6 months on the road and not have to worry about building another business if you're content where you're at? The answer is probably pretty simple. Just reinvest in your business and focus more on time freedom than it is on building more revenue.
Yeah, ain't no way in hell I'm doing that again. Like, I build my businesses actually while I travel. All of them are designed to be built while I travel. So it's actually very rare for me to go on air quotes vacation. You got two real estate podcast guys here talking about businesses and multiples, which is a pretty good indicator that I believe all roads go back to business. And I know a lot of people that are great investors, but there's a bottleneck there. So you have to be a great business owner and turn your investments into a business owner to really like scale past that point. Because like you said, even one of those liquidity events could be 20 million plus into the bank account. So let's talk a bit about partnerships. Because like the way I view things is I start with the people first and then the business. So I'm curious about how you go about partnerships and how do you carve up the pie of your time and your week and how do you allocate it to different people, different businesses, stuff like that. Because to do what you do today is a requirement of people and capital of personnel leverage. So it's like Naval Ravikant says, labor, capital, and code are kind of the main sources of leverage and you're using people.
Yeah, that's a critical part of it. I've heard it said that you're better off investing in A-class partners and a B-class idea than an A-class idea and B-class partners. You can grade that however you want, whether it's by letter or however you want to do it. Because if you have the right people on the team, they can take a mediocre idea, or even with real estate, they can take a good deal and turn it into a great deal because they know what they're doing. They have the resources, the contacts, the strategies, the tactics, the ideas to turn something that's good and make it great. But if you don't have that A team, you have a B team, but you have a great property, A class business idea, or an A class business, it's easier for them to run it into the ground and turn it into something not so good. And this should make sense to most people listening to this, right? It's usually and almost always about the people. Having the right people can make something great. One of the businesses that we acquired through some partnerships that I had in years past, like 4 or 5 years ago, we had a group of investors that pooled their capital together and started making acquisitions in name brand assets. And I'm not going to mention names, but some of your listeners will obviously know who I'm talking about. But we had reached out to Dress Barn, which was a nationwide retailer of women's apparel. Mm-hmm. They filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and they were going through the federal bankruptcy proceeding. We went to them and we gave them an LOI, letter of intent or letter of interest to acquire their intellectual property. They reviewed it, they liked it, they accepted it. And ultimately, when the bankruptcy proceeding was over, we took ownership of all the intellectual property for Dress Barn, which was their customer database, their website, domain names, trademarks, anything that was of value that had brand equity. And we turned it into an online business. And that formula was so successful that we did it again with Pier 1 Imports, which was a $1 billion business. And then we did it again with Linens and Things, and then Steinmart, and then Modell Sporting Goods. Ultimately, we made an acquisition with bodybuilding.com.
No shit. So you're buying IP only?
That's what we did, because they all filed for bankruptcy. And so they were going to be liquidated in its entirety. But what carries the most amount of value on there? They already spent tens of millions of dollars building a brand over many years. And so everyone recognizes those names like Dress Barn, Pier 1, Linens and Things. They recognize that, right? I don't have to spend that money to rebuild that. So I'm going to leverage that equity that was already built around those brands and then run those businesses online as another e-com business, just Amazon, Best Buy, Walmart.com, Wayfair.
Did Pier 1 have any brick and mortar?
Many of them, lots.
I was about to say, so what happened with the brick and mortar locations?
Because they went through a formal federal Chapter 7 bankruptcy, there was a trustee involved, and everything was liquidated. All the stores were closed. All the inventory was liquidated. The debtors were paid back first. And then if there was anything left over, that went on a prorated basis to shareholders. I don't know if it ever got to that point. But yeah, they had probably over 1,000 stores. It's recognized as a worldwide brand, but mostly in North America.
And you continue operations online as the brand?
Yes. Yeah. So if you go to pier1.com, you'll see everything's fully merchandised. It's running. There's a lot of product, thousands and thousands of products, and you could put it in your shopping cart and have it shipped to you.
Okay, dude, I've never heard of this before. Like, why do you even run a real estate podcast? Like, why were we just spending an hour talking about real estate when you have this?
This is so much better. This is so cool.
Dude, this is insane. So in the IP sale, then you're obviously still dealing with the transaction of material goods and assets. So how does your ownership transfer to the assets? Or is that just like a third party almost drop shipping model to where the assets of the company get liquidated to third parties and then you guys are just buying those same assets and then promoting them on the website and then just making like an exchange? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. So yeah, you're asking me a question about the inventory and logistics.
So you're not buying the assets, you're just buying the IP and the brand.
Correct. Yeah, because you don't need the inventory, because what we've done is we set it up where most of the product that we're selling right now is being drop shipped. So we don't need to physically handle that product in a warehouse. Now, granted, we do have inventory that is pick, pack, and shipped for the stuff that we actually want to buy that will give us a higher margin. Like, we make more profit on the stuff that we actually buy in bulk because we get it at a cheaper price and we can ship it. But most of the stuff, in order to make this transaction happen without having a massive amount of capital for inventory, is we basically went back to all the suppliers that Pier 1 had and said, look, we're going to continue running the business online. And we're going to rebuild this business, take that brand and rebuild this business into an empire like it was once before. We obviously want to continue working with you. So we made sure that we paid them what they were owed, because they were owed monies from the old Pier 1. Mm-hmm. That company went away. It got dissolved. We moved all that intellectual property into a new entity, a new holding company, and running it as an online business. And so the suppliers want to still work with us. They recognize that they can move product through our website and the brand, because they have before. They just don't want to lose sales. So we just have agreements with them where they're drop shipping the product for us. And most of our product is drop shipped. So we make a smaller margin. We don't have to have the stress or worry.
Warehousing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we did with Dress Barn. That's what we're doing with Pier 1 and some of the others.
Dude, it's genius. So what does your ops team look like for that? Because there's still a significant amount of transaction volume.
Yeah, a lot of it's automated. So we do have a team for merchandising. Yeah. We still have buyers, if you will, that work on product, future product that to bring on, especially seasonal stuff, whether for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever it may be. But yeah, there's a team to manage the inventory, update the website, just keep everything refreshed. And, you know, we've got an executive team. We've got some really bright people coming on board. And then, of course, you got your accountants, your CFO, and all that kind of stuff.
So you got full C-suite and three tiers of management for each one of these entities. Are you like bringing them in from Holdco, or is there any transfer from the previous entity? Or
so right now, so we had an interim CEO that was running everything from top down through management. That person's phasing out, and we have a person who will probably be coming in, who I can't mention their name at the moment, but they are an ex-executive of a very large publicly traded retail merchandiser. They are consulting to us right now, but we're basically setting it up where they come on as our CEO, and then they'll be responsible for the executive team, and then of course the entire management layer, and then all the ops underneath that. And so we're basically rebuilding for a second time. And this is the point I was trying to make before about, I forgot what you asked me.
Yeah, I forgot what I asked you, because now we just went down this freaking genius rabbit hole. Dude, can this be applied at a smaller scale, or is this more so a really large, extraordinarily established brand thing?
The advantage that we have in what I just talked about is, out of the gate, we don't have to sell anybody on Pier 1 or Linens and Things or Dress Barn. It's a well-known brand. It's ingrained in people's heads. They know it's a quality product. They know the type of merchandise they're going to get if they were to go to a store, or if they were to go online. They just know what they're going to find. And so it's an easy sell at that point. In fact, it's hilarious, because even people who go to Amazon.com will still type in Pier 1 as a search term to find Pier 1 product available through Amazon. So like candles, for example, Pier 1 was the third largest retailer of scented candles in the country. But they had their own chemists. They had their own candle department because of the volume of candles that they sold. So it's just wild.
That's insane. I've just never in a million years thought about purchasing a business for its branding and IP alone and not doing an asset sale, because they've got so many assets on the books, inventory, warehousing, all that different stuff. And you're just like, no, we don't need any of that. We're just going to go directly to the suppliers. We're going to buy the brand, optimize online, bring everything online, and then just go directly to the suppliers and just work as an intermediary while we maintain the brand, which is like, dude, it's genius. That's such a good idea.
Yeah, because if we let it go through the Chapter 7 bankruptcy to its completion, it would have all been gone. It would have just gone down the tube and it would have just been another story in a history book. But you ask yourself, where is the value in that business? A lot of it is in the brand name, brand recognition, call it brand equity. And that's essentially what we bought, is the brand equity. And of course, the customer database, which was like millions of people, their name and email addresses and all that kind of stuff. So we can market to them. So now that we're running the business, we can send out discounts and offers and product of the day or product of the week, 10% coupon, all that kind of stuff to that list and drive traffic back to the website.
So now you've got this going, which obviously you're doing with multiple partners and you guys have an entire entity built around this. What's an operating week look like for you? Are you just meeting with like key executives, partners on one day? Do you have one day for this business, another day for this team? What does an operating week look like for you?
I like to operate at what I call the 50,000 foot level. I'm basically interfacing with all my partners on all these different business ventures. And that could be in the e-com space that we just talked about, which is one category in Norada Capital, the private equity firm I was telling you about. Another category is what I call educational masterminds. We have our Money is Mastermind. We have our Level Up Real Estate, which is a real estate mastermind. That all falls under that Aspire Tour umbrella I was talking to you about before we started recording. So my partners in that, we're building all these different educational masterminds to educate literally thousands of people about money movement, deferring, eliminating taxes, building wealth through real estate on all the different tracks. So that's the second category under Norada Capital. And then I'll mention the third only because people find it fun, cool, sexy, whatever you want to call it. But through that, I'm co-producing about 12 Broadway productions, 12 musicals.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's a bit of a passion project. They are high risk. I will openly admit that it is a high risk endeavor to produce theatrical productions, but they can also be very lucrative. When you hit a Wicked, a Hamilton, a Six, a Moulin Rouge, Phantom of the Opera, something like that, they could run for many years. So you'll recoup your capital and then everything from that day forth is profit. It'll be profit for as long as that production runs. And then, of course, you could spin it off into a traveling production, another international production. You open up in London or Australia, wherever else. And so now you have royalties from these other locations.
Yes. This is insane, dude. We don't have time today, but we need to do a full other podcast on like the Aspire Tour and all the educational arms underneath that. This is insane. But right now, me and you both got other calls on the calendar that we got to get to. So, man, round two coming soon, or we can go deep into this. I don't understand why you're even running a real estate podcast. If I was you, completely unsolicited advice, because I don't matter at all, I would put somebody else on that freaking thing. And I'd be talking about this stuff, dude. This is so much more insane than real estate. That's freaking genius what you guys are doing. Oh my God. And it's like such a low friction acquisition. Of course there's friction in it, but like an IP transition and like a branding transition, as opposed to doing so much inventory work and like physical asset work. That's insane. Man, where can people find out more about you? Where can they learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, I want to say real quick, I did have three other podcast ideas. I have the names picked out, the domain names bought, and the artwork for the podcast done.
You should do it.
I know I should do it, and I do want to do it. We talked about time before and how busy we all get, and I just haven't had time to do those other podcasts, at least not yet, but I intend to at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I appreciate you having me on the show. This has, you know, been fun. It's gone fast, and man, we're just scratching the surface. There's so much more we could talk about. But yeah, if anybody wants to follow me, they can go either to my website or my Instagram, and everything I've talked about just is linked on there and it branches out. So my website is simply my name, marcosantarelli.com. And my Instagram, I put my middle initial in. It's Marco G. Santarelli. And that's my Instagram. And I'm going to be posting more and more of what I do on a day-to-day basis there soon. So
perfect. Guys, go follow that. And we will definitely, we'll go ahead and get on the books another one to where we can go straight into, because this is easily another hour-long conversation on all this stuff, dude. This is so interesting. All right, guys, check out Marco's stuff. Check out his podcast. We'll have it all linked to the show description. And with that, man, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Well, that's been Marco and Brian with the Action Academy Podcast, signing off. Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it, so I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want, and I can only do that with your help. There are 2 main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 or 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.